1.
Engineers in America have developed a computer program that can train itself to spot skin cancers in photos from a patient's skin, and then in tests it does it as successfully as a panel of trained skin specialists. Stanford PhD student André Estevar invented it.
What we've done is to build a computer algorithm, like a computer program, that can match the performance of board-certified dermatologists at identifying whether or not an image of a skin lesion is benign or malignant. And we've tested it across three really important medical diagnostic use cases, which include identifying carcinomas, including basal and squamous cell carcinomas, from their benign counterparts, as well as identifying malignant melanoma from normal, ordinary moles.
And you do this by showing the computer program images of these respective lesions?
That's correct. We use a data-driven approach, which, in contrast to previous computer programs where you would tell the computer, do step one, do step two, do step three, instead what we do is we feed the computer a massive amount of data. We show it images, and we tell it what those images are of, for instance, malignant melanoma, and it learns through a training process how to distinguish between benign and malignant all on its own.
2.
A replacement pancreas that cures diabetic mice has been grown successfully in an animal of a different species by scientists in Japan. Tomoyuki Yamaguchi and his colleagues injected mouse stem cells into developing rat embryos. Once the rat had developed, they were able to transplant the pancreas tissue into a group of diabetic mice, fixing their blood sugar levels for more than a year. Zhou Chao, he's a stem cell biologist at Harvard University who wasn't involved in the research, took Chris through what the Tokyo-based team have achieved.
What they did essentially is they managed to grow a mouse pancreas in a rat, and then they subsequently harvest this mouse pancreas from the rat and transplant it into a diabetic mouse, and was able to show that this can reverse the diabetes of the recipient mouse.
Now, why is that a breakthrough?
First of all, this has never been done before. This whole process, I think, it points a potential way to grow organs for future clinical use in human organ transplantation. I think that's the exciting part of it. It's a proof of concept.
3.
40 million people are affected worldwide by heart failure. This is where the heart muscle is diseased and cannot pump sufficient amounts of blood. It's very debilitating and it robs sufferers of their quality of life. At the moment, the only long-term effective solution is a transplant, but only a tiny minority of people are lucky enough to receive one.
This has prompted researchers to develop gadgets called ventricular assist devices that can be plumbed into the heart to help it to pump, but they're not without problems. Now, Ellen Roach has designed a much better one, which fits around the heart like a glove.
So this is a sleeve made of a rubber with embedded balloons that can contract and beat with the heart to help the heart to pump additional blood around the body. The advantage of this type of technology is that the sleeve goes around the outside of the heart and it doesn't contact the blood like the existing ventricular assist devices.
Why is it a problem if these devices contact blood?
Because blood is pumped through foreign materials and in contact with foreign components, it can clot, and clotting can lead to events such as stroke. So patients that have these devices are on blood thinners, and this medication can itself have complications.
4.
Acrylamide is essentially it's a naturally occurring chemical, so that means we don't add it to foods, it just naturally is produced. And it's mainly found in foods when those foods are cooked at higher temperatures and for particularly long periods of time. So it's usually when foods are baked or fried or roasted or toasted. And so if we're looking at the foods that acrylamide is found in most commonly, it's in things like crisps, chips, biscuits, bread and cake. These foods that I've mentioned, they contain the building blocks for this for acrylamide to form, basically. So there's a special reaction. It's got a quite a long name. It's called the Maillard reaction. So basically that's a chemical reaction that occurs between sugars and amino acids that are in the foods. When these two things, the sugars and amino acids, react, and also with water, that produces this reaction and it gives off acrylamide or creates acrylamide. And that's what gives the brown colour to food, and it can also change the taste of food as well. So it gives that gives it that sort of roasted, charred sort of taste that you might know.
So we're thinking like roast potatoes or browned toast.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's the Maillard reaction.
And why is acrylamide bad? What's the potential issue here?
Well, the concern has basically come from a number of animal studies that have actually found acrylamide has the potential to damage our DNA inside cells. And basically, DNA damage can lead to cancer. So it's really important, though, that people remember that the same process hasn't been established in humans. So we don't have the data, we don't have the evidence to say that there's also a link between acrylamide and cancer risk at the moment. So we need more research in that area.
5.
When you think about things that increase the risk of cancer, you'd probably list things like smoking, UV rays from the sun, or air pollution. But in fact, like the inflation of the nation's waistlines, there's a growing number of cancers that are linked to obesity and being overweight. A new study published in The Lancet this week from scientists at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine has looked at more than 5 million people in the UK and concluded that around 12,000 cancers every year can be put down to excess weight. I spoke to lead researcher Krishnan Bhaskaran to find out more.
So this was a very large study. We were able to include data from over 5 million people. And the way that we did that was to access anonymised GP records from across the country. What we did was we put together the height and weight measurements that have just been made in regular GP consultations as part of routine care. And we also looked forward in those anonymised records to see later on whether there were any diagnoses of cancer in the same people.
What sort of timescale are we talking from those measurements being made to then a diagnosis of cancer? I mean, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years?
Well, it varied, but the data source that we had access to, the earliest kind of records from that were in the late 80s, early 90s. So for some people, we had about 20 years. So on average, we had, I think, 6 or 7 years of follow-up for the average person in the study.